AT and the Dawn with your hosts, Jimmy Thompson and Donato Bucci. They're covering the most current issues in sports from the 305 to the 412 and all the way to the West Coast. You can follow them on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at JT and the Dawn or email them at jtandthedawn@gmail.com. Now take it away, guys.
Give them a shot to do what?
Welcome to the next episode of JT and the Dawn, presented by Give Us a Shot Network. I am the Dawn, Donato Bucci, and remember to subscribe to us. We can be found on all of the podcast platforms and wherever you find all of your other favorite podcasts. And remember to leave us a five-star review, and also remember to subscribe to the Give Us a Shot Network YouTube channel. Thank you to Nicole Thompson for the wonderful introduction, and to our guy Mike Regina with the pump up JT and the Dawn music. Let's get right to it. Let me welcome in everyone's favorite JT, Jimmy Thompson. How you feeling today?
Good, man. It's been a while. Excited to get this show started, bro.
I know. I see you still have that ugly hat.
It's shit not going away. I don't understand why you get so worked up about this. It's just a hat, man.
I'm waiting for Justin. Well, never mind. We'll talk about Justin Fields later. So, all right. So while free agency begins next week, JT, some see the NFL Combine as the beginning of next season already. The Combine was this past weekend in Indianapolis, as always. And it didn't disappoint, and it never does. I know we get excited about it every time. I still don't know why you can't get us credentials to get down there. We're part of the media. We can be covering this. Work on that for next year. I've been asking you for 3 years now. So let's start with this, JT. Two players that helped themselves the most with this combine.
Man, that's tough. I think a lot of players help themselves. I think anybody that's an offensive tackle that or a team that needs an offensive tackle, I think, look, all the tackles help themselves. But two guys that stuck out to me, the first is the elephant in the room, is Xavier Worthy, the wide receiver from Texas. I mean, you probably watched it live. Like, I watched it. I was like, damn, 4.25. I was like, he's flying. I was like, he's not going to run again. Then he's like, let's run it back. And just hearing the crowd's reaction to him breaking the 40-yard dash record, like, you can tell it was something special. But I think he was one of my biggest winners because his wide receiver class is so loaded. This is probably one of the best ones in a decade. Like, there's like six guys that can go in the first round, and he was kind of one of those guys in the fifth or sixth spot. You run that kind of 40, I mean, it's got to shoot you up the draft board. The last guy to run that 40 jumped into the top 10, John Ross, and I think this kid's way better than him. So I think Worthy definitely helped himself. And then I think the DB from Alabama, I hope I'm saying his name right, Arnold Therrien, I think he helped himself too. I think he had really impressive workout in the drills. He looked real smooth in all the workouts. So those two guys, and then for honorable mention, a guy that I like, but he got to show me more. He kind of did the Anthony Richardson thing this year, Joe Milton from Tennessee. Cannon. And you know he has the athleticism, man. So those are my biggest winners, those three right there, in my opinion.
You know, you're only supposed to give two. This is the problem. This is why this show goes on forever, and I never get a chance to talk.
No, it goes on forever because all you do is complain when you don't get your way.
That's right. And I'm in a complaining mood because my fantasy basketball team is not doing well.
Which has nothing to do with I know. Talking about right now. You said confidence as a fantasy owner has nothing to do with this show.
Hey, I'm gonna play.
Man, you gotta stop bringing your personal problems to work. That's not a healthy work environment.
I'm in the playoffs in fantasy basketball, so I'm doing something right. All right. So Xavier Worthy, I had him at the top of the list. I figured one of us would cover that. Great job there. I had everything you had, so that was a great job. You did great there. I'm going to go with Isaac Guarendo, who the running back from Louisville, JT, he's 6 feet, 221. He had the best 40-yard time of running backs, 4.33. This guy's 6 foot, 221. Like, that's not normal to be able to run a 40 that fast at that size. And then he had the best vertical measurement in terms of jumping, straight vertical jump of the running backs. And the broad jump, he had the second best distance among running backs. I mean, when we talk about measurables, like you said, when someone runs a 40 like that, like Xavier Worthy, you jump up. I think Isaac Guarendo now in a running back class that there's not that Saquon Barkley
There's no bell cow number one guy. Like there ain't no Jonathan Taylor in this class.
Exactly. There's no Derrick Henry. There's no Saquon Barkley. He separated himself. And then the other guy, I'll go to defensive back, cornerback, but not from Alabama. I'm going to go from Toledo. Quinyon Mitchell, he had the second best cornerback time. Again, 4.33, tied for third of anyone, right? Tied with Guarendo of Louisville. And he was just smooth in his drills. And I think the reason why he helped himself the most was there were a lot of questions going in on him in terms of if he could hang with the big time receivers, right? Because he played at Toledo, kind of that mid-major type of conference. But he showed, even at 6'1", 195, he can hang. He can play. And I think he helped himself a lot as well. So let's look at the flip side. Two players that hurt themselves the most.
I feel like a lot of guys hurt themselves, man. Like some hurt themselves just by doing absolutely nothing at all, man. Like, I would have loved to see guys like Brock Bowers work out. I'd have loved to see Drake May throw. I mean, like, I think Caleb Williams, everybody was like, oh, Caleb's not working out, so, like, we ain't got to work out either. Like, not him.
Jaden. I mean, you had Jaden Daniels and Malik Nabers. We would have loved to have seen those guys, too. It would have been a lot of fun.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is another guy. Like, there are reports that, like, he was scheduled for events and didn't show up. I'm like, This draft class had some weird guys at the top that, yeah, they're waiting on their pro days, but I just never seen something like that at the combine. But I will say I'll stick with the running backs. I think Bucky Irvin from Oregon was a loser just because, like you said, this running back class is anybody's to take. And the guy you named that won, I think he kind of catapulted himself up, you know, toward the top five. Where like Bucky, I think, was viewed as like a top five running back coming into the combine. I also checked my glasses. So he only weighed at 5'9", 192 pounds, which we know is really small for a running back, jumped under 30 inches in the vertical, and had a 9.7 broad jump. All of those are like all-time like low athletic scores, and you're small. Like, if you're going to be that small and come into the league and get drafted high and be good, you got to be like a Jahmyr Gibbs type of athlete. And I think Bucky showed us that he's not. So him, I think he's probably my biggest loser. The other guy that I think is a loser, in my opinion, I hate to say it, maybe I was expecting too much from him, was Cam Kitchens, man. We know he's a dog. UM safety, the heartbeat of our defense past couple of years, comes out and runs like in the 4.6s. I'm like, I thought he was going to be a little bit more explosive. Maybe he's not healthy from the injuries he suffered last season, but I think if he would have ran a good 40 time, I think maybe we're talking about late first round, 4.6, I think maybe day two now at best. So I think those are my two losers.
Well, I'm not going to say losers. I think
– I mean, hurt themselves. Hurt themselves. Nobody's a loser. They're all winners. I know you want me to take a positive approach.
Yes, that's better.
This year, you guys are all winners. These are the guys I think hurt themselves the most.
That's better. Yeah, and I'm going to start with Cam Kitchens' teammate, Leonard Taylor, defensive tackle.
Oh, I was hella disappointed.
Out of the University of Miami as well. Like, he didn't test well at all. His three cone drill was 7.81, and you'll see later when I talk about an offensive lineman, comparing an offensive lineman to that cone drill, Leonard Taylor didn't get close. And most important of why I think he hurt himself the most was other interior defenders in the combine. They stole the spotlight, JT. Guys like Braden Fisk of Florida State, undersized guy compared to Leonard Taylor.
Blind.
He tested exceptionally well, especially when you compare to Leonard Taylor. And then I thought the other guy that hurt himself the most, too, was Kalen King, cornerback out of Penn State. Yeah. He's 5'11", 191, right? You got to figure, all right, this guy's a burner. 4.61, 40? Like, he had a disappointing year after all that hype going into his junior year, after a great sophomore year. But he didn't help himself here in the combine. And why I think he hurt himself the most was he is now maybe a day two type of guy. Like, I think after that performance, if he's lucky, he can maybe still get in on day two. So I think that's why he hurt himself the most. So this next one, one player you still have more questions than answers on.
I can go with a billion guys. I'll tell you what. It was a
is that your that, answer? Is that your answer for everything so far?
I can name like 10 guys that like the combine absolutely answered no questions for me. But I'll go with the guy that I had the most questions on. And I forgot who said this. And they were like, when he announced that he wasn't working out at the combine, I forgot who said it. I think it was Will Compton was like, good. He shouldn't work out because he's a white cornerback. We don't need any of those stereotypes like sneaking up and dinging his draft stock if he doesn't like have a workout out of this world. And I thought about it. I was like, you know what? That's true. We haven't had a guy play cornerback that was white since Jason Seahorn. And for those of you know, that's a long ass time. So what's his name? Cooper DeJean? Him not working out, to me, I still don't know. Like, is he this good? Like, they're saying he can go in the first round. First of all, any corner going in the first round, you know that they're talented. The scouts are saying that. And he's white. So, I mean, when you talk about, like, first-round skill position talent being white, I'm expecting Christian McCaffrey-level athleticism. Like, that's the bar. I think that's why he didn't work out, because he probably ain't going to run a 4.3. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe he doesn't look the smoothest in drills, but obviously the kid knows how to play. Like, he's a stud at Iowa. But I still got a lot of questions. I didn't see him work out. I didn't see him work out against other top athletes at the position. So, I'm like, what are you hiding? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like you're a lock to go in the first round. So you could have came out here, ran a 4.3, ran a 4.4, went home, and your first round status is locked up. But he didn't do any of that.
So
that's the guy I got the most questions on.
So you look at it the other way, because a lot of guys, I think, like Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and Malik Nabers, they really have nothing to benefit from here.
Yeah,
right?
They're top 10 regardless.
They're like top three, really, when you think about it. Top five overall, those three guys. So, but you're saying here that the Iowa cornerback, it's more about, you know, I don't want to slip, and that mystique about me can stay if they never see me work out.
Exactly. I'm just saying, like, I want to – if he goes through this entire circus, this is including his pro day or, like, maybe private workout, if he, like, goes this whole time without running a 40, to me that's a red flag, but maybe it don't matter. But, like I said, I wanted to see him come out there, work out, and, like, do his thing, because I do think he's a first-round talent.
Listen, I think some guys, they are just better game day players, and it doesn't matter what position there really are. So, like, some guys we hear about in the NFL or in college, maybe they don't have like the best practice habits, but when they get out on the field, it's like you wouldn't know that as a fan because you weren't at practice all week.
But see, Cooper didn't want to come and work out and get the gritty label because you know how that looks. You know, he's gonna come out and go from like, oh, this dude's a hell of an athlete, man. He's athleticism, Christian McCaffrey. To now, it's like, yeah, he's a gritty corner. Like, you don't want to hear that.
He's tough, hard nosed.
Exactly. Like when John Gruden starts complimenting you. That's how you know the athleticism is gone. But, like, I think that's what he's worried about, like, just the optics. And it might not even be true. Like, he might be a really good athlete. I just don't know.
Okay. So that's interesting. I'm going to go with a guy that was at the combine, but I still have more questions than answers on, and that's Troy Franklin, receiver out of Oregon. I mean, he weighed in at 176 pounds, JT. And I know I didn't have an issue with Devontae Smith's size. So it's not all that, but
Devonta Smith also won a Heisman Trophy.
Right, exactly. Now, Troy Franklin, though, that's 11 pounds less than when he was at Oregon. And then he backed it up with inconsistent drills, and he just, you know, he didn't look sharp in those competitive periods, those competitive situations at the combine. And, you know, when you've got a guy like Xavier Worthy, right, running that 40 time, and then you back it up, yes, with a 4.41, but you're undersized, inconsistent in drills, you weren't great in competitive situations, and it's a deep wide receiver class. Like, what is it about him that he will make teams take him? I don't know at this point, because like you said, that receiver class is deep. Xavier Worthy moved up. Does that mean someone's got to come down, right? Like, does that mean Troy Franklin's falling further and further? So I think there's still a lot of question marks. we'll see at the end of the day. But I'm not sure yet on Troy Franklin.
You know what? I agree with that. You could say the same thing about his name, Brian Thomas from LSU. Same thing, man. He did everything I expected him to do. Come out there, look like a crazy athlete, but tape just don't match that. And you know who else? I'll give you somebody that was there that I still got more questions to answer. Keon Coleman.
Well, he did not have a good combine, whereas Brian Thomas did, but Keon Coleman did not.
He didn't test well, like speed wise, but like there's some drills. I was like, he looked good. Like, I think he falls into that line of guys. It's like, show up and the kid can play. Like, he might not do all this well testing, but I still got more questions than answers. Like, is he the superstar guy that it was like at one point he was like a top four receiver in the draft, first round pick? Now it's like,
right,
will he be late second round? Like, I still don't know.
Right. He might fall out of the second round completely. Yeah. That's another guy for sure. All right, so who's one player that you would move off your board at this point?
That's so dramatic, man.
Listen, it's a JT question. Don't tell me it's dramatic when
if I had the opportunity, I'd draft all these guys and let them compete aggressively.
Good answer. There we go.
Define move off the board. Like, I'm taking out of like the first two rounds. Like, realistic.
I think someone that you really, at this point, there's so many other guys at that position that you'd rather have, that for this guy, for you to take him, it would be, you don't like anybody else on the board at that point.
That's tough, man. I mean, I could easily go with Leonard Taylor, man. I was just so disappointed. You know what was the most disappointing thing about him? I wanted to bring this up when you mentioned him earlier. Like, the workout to me was disappointing. It was when they kept showing like his career stats, like on the screen. I was like, damn.
So you're saying even his stats were disappointing, right?
Yeah, like, how big of a disappointment he was. Yeah, he was a big-time recruit.
Right, so I was just clarifying that for the people at home. But the thing with that, JT, is you're right, because some of these other guys that we say, hey, they're disappointments, like a Kalen King or you know, you mentioned like a Cam Kitchens, they at least produced that one.
Yeah.
Like, Leonard Taylor – We love him because he's from the U, but I don't know. I don't know what to think.
Yeah, I would say probably if I'm taking him off the board, probably your guy from Penn State, man. And it's a the cornerback. I forgot his name, but Jalen King. It's just a combination of stuff like that, man. He's a smaller guy. He already had a struggle year in college, and then you come and test poorly at the combine. Like, the odds of you like living up to where they're going to draft you based on your name, I think it's already saying it's a bad investment. So I'm not taking them completely off my board, but I'm lowering the expectations to like the basement, just because the optics tell me that this is probably not going to work out just based on what I've seen.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Spencer Rattler. He finished last in every testing drill among quarterbacks. And this draft, to me, I think it's a QB deep draft, because you have the top guys, right? You have, what, four guys that might go in the first 12 picks.
Isn't a QB deep draft, though? Because I feel any draft class where they say it's QB deep, I think it's fool's gold sometimes. Because, like, the draft class being considered deep at quarterback is manufactured by the media. Wide receivers are legit. Like, there's, like, 12 of them guys that are good. Like, the quarterback is like J.J. McCarthy. Like, I love him. In the Heisman Trophy 2 years ago. But it's like, what has J.J. McCarthy done to be a first-round pick?
Well, let me explain, though, what I mean by QB draft that is
the
deep.
Name means,
that and where guys are going to go in terms of the rounds. I mean, you've got four QBs that are going to go probably top 10 to top 12. All right? And then you have that second tier of guys. And this was my point of where – okay, maybe you don't take Spencer Rattler off the board, because I think that's a little harsh. It's not like he did anything wrong, right? Or did something illegal. But that second tier, you've got my guy Michael Penix, you got Bo Nix, you even got a guy like Michael Pratt. Like, where does Spencer Rattler fit? So if I'm not getting one of those first seven,
you don't have him in the top seven?
No, I just named the top seven. You've got the big four. You've got the big four. You've got Penix, right? That's five. You got Bo Nix, and you could even put a Michael Pratt in before Spencer.
I'm taking Spencer in the top seven. Like, it's just too much talent, man.
I understand that, but JT, at some point, I want you to produce. I want you to show me.
You go play quarterback at South Carolina. Let's see how well you do.
He was at Oklahoma. That's the difference.
Which is why Lincoln Riley had to take his quarterback and leave.
Exactly, because
the talent around him CeeDee Lamb and the boys was not there.
He won with Caleb Williams. Lincoln Riley was able to win with Caleb Williams there. Come on. It doesn't matter. He won more games than with Spencer Rattler. All right. Most impressive player.
I feel like Xavier is like the low hanging fruit, but
Take my guy.
That impressed me just because I didn't expect him to look as good as he did amongst like the group he was competing. I think it was Michael Penix, man. Like, his workout kind of gave me like the CJ Stroud vibes, man. Like, you see it, the footwork, the ball placement, the confidence. Like, I don't know if you saw this video of him throwing a deep shot, and you can see it on his face. And funny enough, Spencer Rattler's in the background looking, Michael Penix looking like, I got this shit, man. This is going to be a god. Like, just the confidence, and like, now I've seen it. I've seen him throw with receivers he's never worked out with before. Like, I think he's back in the first round of discussion. So I think, to me, him showing up and impressing me kind of in a CJ Stroud fashion is why I'm going to pick him for that question.
Hey, that's my guy. You should have won the Heisman. No offense to Daniels. Penix should have won it. But the most impressive guy, listen, I watched, of all the position groups, we love watching the quarterbacks and the receivers go. But of all the position groups, I probably watched the most of the O-line. It was just something fascinating.
They were out of control. You can't just pick one of them.
I know. There's so many good offensive linemen, and they're pretty athletic. It was amazing. But the guy that I think stole the show in terms of most impressive was my fellow Paisan, Tanner Bordellini. All right? He ranked number 6th in the raw athletic score of all offensive guards, JT, from 1987 to today. Number six.
The name again?
Tanner Bordellini. I know you're Googling him right now.
I just want to see if this is the guy with the mullet.
It may have been.
Yes, this is him. Yes, I saw him. I saw him run his 40. And I saw him work out. And I was like, just the way he was built in the mullet. I was like, damn, he looks short, but he's moving. But he's not a little dude. I was like, oh, it's a lineman. He looks like he would walk into a bar, out drink you, chug the beers, and then go out and beat you in a foot race in the parking lot. Yes.
So he may be a little short in terms of height, 6'4", but he's 6'4", 303. His 40 time, number one at his position. Number one at his position, 4.94. Now, that three-cone drill I mentioned about Leonard Taylor, who ran a 7.81, this guy, offensive lineman, from Wisconsin, not Miami, Wisconsin, 7.16 seconds. I mean, that was the fastest three-cone drill time for a center breaking Jason Kelsey's record. He looked smooth in his drill work. I mean, that is why I put him most impressive, because it was a lineman doing all these things. Like, if I told you, hey, Xavier Worthy is going to run a 4.21, or this guy at 6'4", 303 is going to run a 4.94 40 and have the sixth best raw athletic score of all offensive guards from 87 to 2024. You put your money on Worthy, right? So, like, I think that's why this was the most impressive. All right, last one of the combine. We got to look at the opposite. Most disappointing player.
It's tough, man. I feel like the easy one is a guy that I felt had the opportunity to really make himself like a top 20 pick with a great workout. It is Jatavion Sanders, the tight end from Texas. Because Brock Bowers didn't work out. And this is a weak tight end class. It's really just Brock. Like, if you look online, like, Brock Bowers is really the only tight end that's going to get drafted this year. And Sanders is the only other guy. You would think those are the only two tight ends in the draft. And it's like, man, you could have came out here and had a field day, but he did. I think he ran like a 4.7. Like, his short area drills weren't good. They're all like below like 75th percentile. It's just like, he came out and showed that he's not the athletic type of tight end that people are going to invest the first round pick in. It's like Brock Bowers didn't even show up to like to overshadow you. It was basically just you competing to the media. And I think he did a disservice to himself. So him and the running back from Wisconsin, was it Braylon Allen? I wanted to see like what kind of workout athleticism he was going to put on. And I was like, I just wasn't impressed, man. Like, I want to like him as like a Derrick Henry type, but Derrick Henry fast. And when Derrick Henry works out, we're like, now we get it. Like, Braylon just seems like one of those guys. Like, he's just big, Wisconsin running behind a big line. I don't think he showed me anything special.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Sanders, the tight end from Texas, because the other thing was Theo Johnson, tight end of Penn State, and I believe Kansas State's Ben Sinnott. I mean, they were better than Sanders. So not only did you not do well, but then two other tight ends really kind of looked better than you.
They jumped you probably.
Maybe. My most disappointing, and it's just on a personal level for us, and you mentioned him early being a Miami guy, it was Cam Kitchens. You know, he had come back from a very scary injury against Texas A&M, and then he runs that 4.65 40. That was tied for worst among safeties. And then the broad jump, he had linemen that jumped further than him, JT, in the broad jump. And, you know, he struggled backpedaling in some drills. And I think why it was most disappointing was that I had high hopes for him. Or we did, because we've seen him play. I think he is one of those guys, when he steps on the field, he's a different player, right? Like, some guys are good practice players, and it doesn't translate to the game field. Maybe he's the opposite. Maybe, you know, he doesn't have all the measurements and the metrics, but when he steps on that field, he's around the ball. He's making plays. He's a tough guy.
Is he disappointing or not? I feel like you're still trying to talk yourself into it.
It is disappointing because of what happened at the combine. But he's tough. He can play ball. I still hope he gets a chance, like a legit chance.
He'll get drafted,
but I'm saying a legit chance. That's what I hope for him. But it was just disappointing because of just the
he's one of the best DBs in the measurable past 2 years.
Yeah, I thought he was one of the better safeties this past year.
You know what's crazy though? It's like watching these guys work out, it makes sense why we don't win games. Like, I just think we don't have top tier athletes, regardless of what their recruit ranking says. Like Taylor and Kitchens, those are guys who were linchpins on our defense for 4 years. And like they're like one of the disappointing workouts of the combine. So I think this says a lot about what we've been working with, you know, as Canes fans. Like, we think they're good, but it's like we're looking at compared to like other schools. Like, I think these guys are just like average athletes. So that's something to be said, man.
Well, some of it could be said to the school, right? What are you doing to develop these guys? Because all these other schools have these guys, and they're testing really well. How do we have two of our better defensive guys not test well? I mean,
they're not good test takers. Man. All right, so we're ready to play the check down game. I promise this will be quick. So we're going to do NFL check down game today. So you know how this works. We'll give you a question. We'll provide two possible answers for it. And then we'll select the answer that we think fits best. So let's rock with
this. Hey, great explanation. It sounds like someone wrote that down for you.
I don't know. That don't sound like it needs to be written down. That's how the game works. Wow. So let's jump right into it, because this shit is all about quarterbacks, because they're the only thing that matters. So trade rumors, heat up. Falcons, they're going to get one. Better fit for the Falcons, Justin Fields or Kirk Cousins?
I'm going to go Justin Fields. He's younger. He's more mobile. And when you are a struggling franchise, sometimes you just need someone that can make plays on their own. And Justin Fields can do that. And then the other thing is, you have a pretty young core there, right? Pitts, Drake London, Bijan, especially on offense.
At least two more years that they'll be together.
Right. So you can build chemistry over multiple years with a young quarterback like Fields, whereas Cousins, who knows, maybe only get two more good years from Cousins. And then where does that leave you?
Or maybe he's never the same.
Or maybe not, right? You never know what happens after injuries at an older age. So I'm just going to go Justin Fields. No disrespect to Kirk Cousins, but I would go Justin Fields.
I think if they were both healthy, I think it would go Kirk Cousins. But, I mean, that's not the case. And also with Kirk, I think we've seen what his ceiling is. Like, he's been in offenses with talented players, decent O-lines and weapons and stuff. Like, we see what the ceiling is. Justin Fields, I haven't seen him with any of this. I haven't seen him with a good O-line. I haven't seen him with a great supporting cast. I haven't seen him with a great offensive coach. I mean, Kirk Cousins was playing for Shanahan and O'Connell. Like, those are two great offensive play callers. Like, I haven't seen Justin Fields with any of this. Like, you got the Rams guys coming over calling plays. You already mentioned the young weapons. They got a top five, top six offensive line. And they're in a dome in a bad division. You're like, and he's going home to Georgia. Like all this stuff, I think if Justin Fields goes to Atlanta, like, we could forget what happened in Chicago, like, because of how bad the situation in Chicago was. Like, I just think that I don't know what the upside with Fields is, and this will give me a good opportunity to see what that is. But I do think, best case scenario, I think Fields has the higher upside.
All right, so real quick follow-up question, unscripted here, and it's just for you. I won't answer. Because Fields is your guy, right? You liked him. You liked him coming out of Ohio State with the draft. If you're the Falcons GM, if you're their front office, and you make that decision, we want him to be the guy here. What are you giving up for him? Like, just as of today's date, right? Just as of today's date, obviously this could change as you get closer to the draft. But what would you do if you could make that move right now today? What would be your price that you give up?
I'd give a second round pick.
Okay.
I think that's fair.
So you're not touching that first because it's a high first.
It depends
on. It's a high first for Atlanta, right? I mean, that's a.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think the potential is there, but he hasn't shown me enough to where I can destroy my draft capital for him. But second round, I think, is very good. Like, okay. It's going to be a top 15 pick in the second round. So,
right.
I'd give that up for him.
Yeah, I think it might even be a top eight, actually, or something. All right.
So let's go to your boys, you know, because the Steelers rule this show. Bigger mistake. The Steelers not upgrading at quarterback, or the Panthers not signing Brian Burns to a long-term deal, but instead franchise tagging him. So are you going to give the details on the Brian Burns side of what the Panthers could have done?
Well, no, go ahead.
So basically, I think the Rams offered them like a first-round pick, 2 second-round picks, and some other picks, I want to say last offseason or the year before for Brian Burns. And just for the last offseason, they offered him all those draft picks just for him to have 8 sacks and then be the worst team in the league. And now they're going to franchise tag him for $20 million. So they could have traded him for King's ransom, and they chose not to. Now they're going to franchise tag him, maybe to trade him for nothing.
Well, hindsight's 20/20, and that was last year. So I'm focused just on this question in terms of, was it a mistake not signing to a long term right now? I'm going to go with the bigger mistake is the Steelers not upgrading at quarterback. And it's not for the reason that maybe other Steeler fans would say. I would say it was bring in some competition for Kenny Pickett, right? Don't let him get complacent. He's a young guy, but he had a lot of college success, not so much in the NFL. And I'll give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. He had Matt Canada. The offensive line wasn't great 2 years ago. It really wasn't that much better this year, maybe a little bit better. But plus, even if you don't want to go get a Fields, bring in a veteran for him that he can learn from. He had to learn from Mitch Trubisky. I mean,
who's still learning himself.
Exactly. Like Patrick Mahomes, he learned from Alex Smith. I would say that's a pretty good veteran quarterback to learn from.
He's a winner.
And so quarterback's the most important position in all of sports. So I don't think they've helped or put Pickett in a situation or a position to succeed. And by upgrading, I don't, like I said, not necessarily like a Justin Fields, even though to me that would have been a great move for them, especially with Arthur Smith, but at least bring in someone that's going to push them more than just Mason Rudolph would, and that Pickett can learn from. If you say, hey, this guy's going to have the job for the first 4 games, we'll see how it goes. Then maybe we move back to Pickett. Like, give him some help. Give the guy a chance. And I just don't think the Steelers have done it.
Yeah, I think you got to go with the Steelers. The fact – this gives me the vibe of last offseason when everybody, all those teams that needed a quarterback, Pats were like, nah, we're good. We don't want this guy. And it's like, all right, he goes out and wins an MVP. Like, you can't be this nonchalant and picky when it comes to quarterback because, first of all, every team needs one. And the second is, ain't that many great ones available. When they are, and if you don't have one, you need to be in the market of getting one of those guys. I'm sorry, Justin Fields, Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, who I'll ask you about in a minute. Like, these are pretty good starting quarterbacks. Like, they're in the top 15, 16 in the league, which Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, and Mitch Trubisky are not. Like, how could you be out on those guys? Like, I know Pickett's got a first-round contract. Ain't like they took him in the top 10. Like, I'm sorry. I think you need to realize that it was a bad investment and get somebody in here at the very least that is competition. I would rather go kick the tires on Zach Wilson, bring him in and make him compete.
I wouldn't go
bring him in as competition. Like, the Jets ain't a great organization. I'm not saying Zach Wilson is better than Pickett, but like, our quarterback situation is not solidified to the point where we're like, nah, we're turning our nose down at guys. So I agree. I think them just being out on upgrading their quarterback is the bigger mistake. Now, with that being said, one of these guys is a free agent because he just got released, Russell Wilson. Like, should the Steelers go after him? Would you like to see Russ in Pittsburgh?
Well, I think based on the price tag.
That's a no.
What I'm saying is based on the price tag at this point, meaning you're going to get a Hall of Fame type quarterback on the cheap.
But nothing.
Why not? Because he fits that mold of what I just said. Bring in someone that's going to push Kenny Pickett. But two, even if Russell Wilson wins the job, Pickett can learn from him. And you don't need to pick up the fifth-year option after the third year. Just let it play out for 4 years. And then maybe Pickett plays the following year after learning from Russell. So I would not mind seeing Russell Wilson if the price is right, and I think it can be and will be.
He already said he's willing to take a less deal to play for a contending team or a team
right.
that he feels
is good. I don't mind. I'd still rather – if we're going to go that far in terms of big names, I would go Fields. But if we don't – if Chicago wants too much for Fields, I think Russell Wilson still can fit pretty nice. And I think the fan base in Pittsburgh would love him because he plays that Steeler way, right? He plays like Roethlisberger. He'll run, he'll tuck it, he'll play hard. Like, I think the Steeler fan base will like him.
Yeah, and I think a lot of teams need to look at this pathway when their first-round quarterbacks don't work out. Like, Kenny Pickett could easily be in a situation where you guys bring in a Russell Wilson, compete, he learns. Who's to say he can't take the Baker Mayfield route? Like, that's what Baker needed. He needed to be around other teams, other organizations, other people, other quarterbacks that have played the game and just kind of see the game from the bench. And look at him now. Now he's gonna get another contract. He's a franchise quarterback. Like, Kenny Pickett could easily do that, but you got to get somebody in there to teach him. Or even like a Ryan Tannehill, somebody. But, yeah, I absolutely think you guys should get Russ because, I'm sorry, we're starting to find out. It wasn't all Russ in Denver. Like, Sean Payton, his resume looking a little shaky too. So
you love saying that.
Not because I feel like he's an asshole. I feel like he came in there very arrogant. No, he is. He came in there very arrogant. Like, hey, like, all these guys suck. I'm the king. Bro, you got one Super Bowl. Chill.
All right. Is there another question here or not? Because this was not a Sean Payton segment.
You're lucky I'm not saying what I really want to say about him. last question for you. Broncos obviously released him. You're the capologist. I know it's hella dead money that they're taking this cap.
Yeah.
Who would possess the Broncos to cut him to lose that much money? Well,
I think it does come down to money, though. So you're right. By parting ways with them now, it will result in an $85 million cap hit. It'll be split across two seasons, depending on how it's designated, whatever that might mean. But the Broncos will owe him $39 million guaranteed this year, no matter what. All right.
Oh, he can go home and you'll get $40
billion. Right. So, but this is the thing of why they cut him. Keeping him would have meant a hit of roughly $90 million over two seasons. So you save five overall. But this was the kicker. had they kept him past the start of the new league year, which I think is like March 13th or something, by getting rid of him now and not keeping him into next week, they saved $37 million guaranteed for the 2025 season. So not this upcoming year.
Next season is already off the books by cutting him before the league year.
Right. It's still a dead cap hit that they got to split the $85 million, but they don't have to physically pay him the $37 million like they're paying him this year, $39 million.
I mean, I didn't go to no fancy school, but all that shit sounds like a lot of money no matter how you move the pieces
around. But you're saving the actual money. Why would you pay $37 million to someone that you might get rid of next year, but you had to make the decision now? So get rid of him now.
You getting rid of a guy to save $30 million when you don't even have anywhere close to another plan.
You save $37 million. So this is really the thing, JT. You're either paying him $76 million or you're paying him $39 million. Ooh. What do you want to pay him? That's straight cash. That's straight cash out of your pocket.
I want a discount, man. Russ got a
deal. I mean, you want a buyout. Russ said no buyout. The buyout's right. Already in the contract.
You're like, sir, pay NBA me, rules do not pay apply.
Pay me my $39 million and I'll get out of town.
We'll see what happens. Steelers should get them.
All right. So forget about our Fugazi, everyone's favorite segment. We got to close the show on that or on this. We'll read a statement. If we think it's a hot take, a good take, we'll say forget about it. If we think it is not a good take and we don't agree with it, we'll say Fugazi. All right? JT, first one. Johnny Football. Johnny Manziel's Heisman boycott will force the NCAA to return Reggie Bush's Heisman. Now, what we mean by his boycott is he came out and said, until they give Reggie back his Heisman, he will not be going to those Heisman events, the presentation and all, standing up there on stage. So do you agree that his boycott will force the NCAA to return Reggie Bush's Heisman?
No. This is no way to give a damn about Johnny Manziel. Like, real talk, I love Johnny Manziel. He's one of my favorite college football players, just like the whole Johnny Football, like that whole thing. But Johnny Manziel, him reading the room has never been one of his strong suits. They don't care about you. You are probably one of their least favorite Heisman members out of that whole group. You saying you're not going to show up, they're probably like, thank God, get this out of here. Like, they do not care. Like, you need somebody better than Johnny Manziel to stand there for Reggie Bush and be like, this is wrong. Johnny Manziel ain't that guy. Like, he got too many skeletons in his own closet. You lucky they don't snatch your Heisman. Because you did way worse than what Reggie Bush did. But that's on the public record. But nah, Johnny Manziel's not a big enough figure. Like, the NCAA is dug in with Reggie Bush. Like, he ain't getting it back. He's not getting it back. Like, Michael Jordan himself would have to come in and write a letter of recommendation for them to consider something like that. Then why would the NCAA go back? Like, they're standing on their word. They not budging, man. Reggie, sorry. Johnny not getting you the trophy back.
Yeah, it's Fugazi. You said it. The Heisman doesn't care that Manziel's doing this. The downtown, what is it? The downtown athletic club in New York City, they don't care about Manziel not being there.
They're like, but, oh, Johnny not coming? Less drinks. Cool.
I would
not care.
Oh, man, that's messed up. I will say this, though. If the trophy ever does go back to Reggie Bush, it's going to be more to do with, like, the NIL and the way college football progresses and changes in terms of maybe some sort of pay-for-play structure, where then they look back and say, you know what, while yes, at the time it was illegal to do that per the NCAA rules, now it is not. Let's bring him back. He's one of the legends of all time, and maybe they'll welcome him back.
All right. Sorry, Reggie, you ain't getting it back. Next one.
We hope Jason Kelce. We hope he does.
Jason Kelce, Taylor Swift's brother-in-law, just retired. Jason Kelce
future
brother-in-law. Jason Kelce is a top 10 all-time NFL offensive lineman. Forget about it or Fugazi.
Fugazi. I mean, listen, Jason Kelce, really good player, a great player, helped the Eagles win a Super Bowl, but it's Fugazi. Listen, You know how many great offensive linemen? I just bragged about
playing for the Steelers.
I just bragged about them in the combine. And you know how many great offensive linemen there have been in the history of the NFL? Like, he isn't even the best center of all time. And you just – I also wrote this down, what you just said. The Steelers, JT. If he was in the Steelers organization, he wouldn't even be a top three center. You got Mike Webster, Dermoni Dawson, and Pouncey. I'm not putting Kelsey over those three guys.
Are you putting somebody like – are you putting over him over somebody like Alan Faneca?
No.
Like, you just named five guys right there. That's half the list. Nah, it's Fergazy, man. You just forget about how many great offensive linemen have played like in this league. There's no shot at Jason. I mean, you're talking, what, seven-time Pro Bowl or six-time right. All-Pro Super Bowl champ? Like he is him. He's going to be a first-ballot Hall of Famer.
He's legit.
He is on any all-decade team that he played on, he's going to be on that list.
Yeah,
but,
he's a legend in his own right. And you just said it, like, he'd probably be one of the linemen, top linemen of the decade. So it's not a knock on him. It's just that,
you forget about offensive linemen. Like, because I think offensive linemen that are on winning teams get more pub. But you forget, like, for every guy like a Jason Kelce, there's a guy like a Joe Thomas that, like
– Or an Anthony Munoz.
We forget about those guys because they didn't win anything. But, like,
right.
You putting them over Orlando Pace, Jonathan Ogden, like, I feel like the top 25 has a long jam that is, like, impenetrable. Like, it'll be hard to put him in the top 30. But
I mean, you got guys like Larry Allen.
Yeah.
And then you go back even further, you know, like we talked about some of those Steelers O-linemen, like a Mike Webster and everything, like, you've got guys in the 80s with the Washington teams, right? Like, they were known for their linemen. So, it's tough.
You put Art Shell.
What's that?
You putting them in over your cousin, Tony Boselli?
Ooh, that's a tough one now because Tony Boselli, man.
The fact that that's where we are, neither of those guys are, like, top 30, that lets you know how deep that offensive line group is. We're talking about all time, man.
Yeah. I mean, Boselli's a Hall of Famer, right? I
think that's what I'm saying.
I mean, he's pretty dang good. All right, let's go to basketball. Bronny James is not an NBA player.
I don't know because every time I read something about Bronny James, they're like, "Oh, like the metrics, he's an NBA player." But then look at his stats, and I'm like, "This dude shouldn't even be talked about in the news." I'm like, is it that he's not good? Because if he was good, why would USC not be playing him more? Like, that makes no sense. The objective is to win. Like, if LeBron's son is good, I'm playing him. So I'm going to have to say that it's forget about it. He must not be an NBA player because, like, I'm not seeing it. He's not getting the playing time, and he's not doing enough to where, like, he's not a first-round pick. So I'm saying he's not an NBA player right now.
Well, I'm going to go Fergazy. I think that's a little harsh. I mean, come on. First, you got to look at the circumstances around it that, okay, yes, would we even be talking about if it wasn't LeBron James's son? Maybe not at this point.
No, we wouldn't.
But that doesn't mean he's not an NBA caliber type player. Like, he still is or still can be. I mean, you got to think about this, JT. He went through a life-altering, a life scare situation with the cardiac arrest. Like, sometimes that is a mental hurdle to get over. Just to be back on the court, that is a great feat upon itself. And then he's still only a freshman, right? I mean, come on, he's still getting.
We talk about basketball here. This ain't football. Freshman, but in basketball, freshman, we know.
But what I mean
freshman
is.
Freshman year, we know. Keep it real. Freshman year, we know. But
what I mean is, in freshman, in terms of he's really. Only now becoming a freshman because he missed, I'm sure, a lot of those summer workouts after the cardiac arrest. So he didn't even get all of that camp that a lot of true freshmen get coming in. So I would say pump the brakes here. We talked about it, like a year ago this time, where we said he might be a top 10 pick because his defense is still there. And we're going to talk about it here on the next one, and it's a good lead-in for you. We're seeing a lack of defense in the NBA. Bronny James might look pretty dang good on that court right now in the NBA.
And they ain't playing defensive players. So that's perfect. Next one. Lack of effort is killing the game of basketball.
No, this is Fugazi too. Listen, you and I watch a lot of NBA, probably more than the college game, right? We watch a lot of NBA. To me, those guys put their body on the line every night. I mean, they're going up for layups, and yeah, okay, maybe it's not the 1980s where they're, you know, knocking your head off, but people think in the 80s, no one made a layup. No one ever had a dunk.
They didn't even see why everybody was just shooting jump shots so they died.
No, yeah, right. Or they're going to the hoop and they get thrown into the third row. Like, that wasn't happening. That was only Detroit and then in the playoffs with Boston and LA. Like, that wasn't happening not every team had a Rick Mahorn or a Kevin McHale or, you know, a Kurt Rambis. Like, this is ridiculous. Guys put their body on the line every night. I saw a guy the other night take a charge and they called it blocking. I couldn't believe it. Like, the game, just like in the NFL, JT, it's become an offensive league. And some people have to understand that, but it doesn't mean the effort isn't there. And the last point is, sometimes the effort is there. It's just, you can't stay in front of a Giannis. Just like we talk about in football, guys are bigger, stronger, faster than before. That's not a knock against other, you know, former basketball players or former football players. It's just, that's the fact. Ray Lewis at middle linebacker was not the same size in the 1970s of middle linebackers in the NFL. So when you've got a Giannis coming down your lane, that wasn't seen back in the 80s or 70s unless it was Magic Johnson. So, again, pump the brakes on this lack of effort. These guys are going out there every night and giving their all. Sometimes you just can't stay in front of the guy because Giannis is one of the best players in the world.
I disagree with you. I think lack of effort is it's not just the NBA. No. I think it's across the board. It started with AAU. Oh. And you see it. You know how lack of effort is killing basketball, because where it started is championships and winning is now not important. It's off the table. It's more about, all right, I want to hoop, have fun, get my money. Like, that is the only way you see a situation like the Charlotte Hornets, where, like, they like the last place team in the league and everybody's on the bench having a good time. You know why? All that money's guaranteed. They get in the hoop, get paid. Otherwise, they'd be hooping at LA Fitness for free. And that's what's more important, because you know why? Michael Jordan and his fans have killed it. Like, it is there. Nobody can be the GOAT. Nobody can win six championships. And if you win six, you got to win in a specific way. So, like, the ceiling, nobody can break through the ceiling in basketball. So why the hell am I working hard for? I'm just going to hoop as best I can and make all the money I can, because I know I can never be the best. Like, nobody cares about that shit anymore. Like, think about this. LeBron James, we'll never see this in our lifetime. He can't even be considered the best. Like, Michael Jordan is the reason why there's a lack of effort in the game of basketball, because there is no chance to be a GOAT. At least in football, you can catch Brady, and if you catch him, like, you're the GOAT. Jordan is like, oh, I got to catch him running a 4-3. Like, it's that. I think that, and just the culture of basketball, they get paid way younger now. They're exposed to money. I just think that's more important. Guys want to have a good time, be in a good headspace, and just make good money. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that doesn't incentivize guys to give full effort 100% of the time.
I don't agree with you. I don't quite agree with you there. Not to
tell
say
me I'm wrong.
You bring up some good points, but this is why I tell you you're wrong. Two things. You're talking like the generation before the 90s, where once the 90s came in and they said, that would have never happened in our day and this and that.
No.
And so you're sounding now like the people that would tell us.
I'm saying this. You can tell the effort in basketball is an issue. A couple things. One, the regular season in basketball has, it both in college and the pros, has not mattered for like a decade.
That's not true.
And that's why you don't watch college basketball. We do. That's why people don't watch it until March Madness. And that's why people don't care about the NBA regular season, because it does not matter, because there's no effort. We can't even get dudes to play in the All-Star game. Even that has turned into no effort. Like, I'm telling you, it is affecting the game. I'm not saying it's it's killing it, but it is affecting the game. Like, effort is just not it. Like I know you're an effort guy. You want to play a lot of defense and get a big guy's faces. That shit doesn't matter anymore. It does not.
But my point is, just because maybe the defense isn't there, and again, I don't think it's because of lack of effort. Now, yeah, maybe in the All-Star game, that's true in terms of the defense. But what I'm saying is, JT, guys weren't good three-point shooters in the 80s, even in the 90s. It wasn't exciting. Now it's exciting, but it doesn't mean the effort's not there. I mean, you know how much time these guys put into their shots? Into their dribbling.
I get it.
And what I'm saying is,
I'm not saying they don't go to work. What I'm saying is, I think the effort that I see in today's basketball ain't the same of what I saw previously.
How is it not? These guys are flying to the hoop. They're doing things sometimes.
Because ain't nobody there.
Because they can't keep up. It's tough. This isn't the 80s where guys aren't as athletic and aren't as good in terms of getting to the rim.
It's not only unathletic white dudes in the league anymore. It's tougher. But you've heard guys say it. Like, I think Spencer did when he said this a couple years ago. He was like, playing in the NBA is, yes, the talent is better, but it's much easier in basketball in the NBA than in college because, one, there's nobody in the paint. Like, in college, there's always somebody in the paint.
So
it's hard
that,
to get there.
So what I'm saying is, how is that lack of effort?
Get your ass in there. Take a charge. Lock somebody up.
I saw it the other night. They called it a block. Why would you do that if they're going to keep calling it a block?
That man just got
everyone wants offense. Get with the program. All right. Victor Wembanyama is the best defensive player. Hey, talk about defense. Is the best defensive player in the NBA right now.
Look, man, you're going to have to give me my props because you laughed at me when we talked about this a couple shows ago. I told you. I was like, I think he's already a top 10 player, and I think we're seeing the next Wilt Chamberlain. You're like, pop, pump the brakes.
You said Wilt Chamberlain?
I think we're seeing – go back and run the tape.
Definitely pump the brakes there. Don't disrespect Will.
So all he's done since I said that comment is he's led the league in blocks for the last month, and he has more blocks himself than any NBA team. Like, it's insane. The man had like 47 blocks in a month. You understand that I was saying this for a player to have that many blocks in a month? Hell yeah, he already the best defensive player. Nobody get the shot off. And he can defend you on the perimeter. Obviously, he's protecting the paint. Best defensive player in the league already. I'm sorry. It's over.
So, yeah, it's forget about it. And he now has...
Say his name. Wilt Chamberlain Wembanyama. Say it.
No, that's... I'm not disrespecting Wilt like that.
I ain't
okay?
either. But, hey, I ain't seen anything... There's only three people in my life that I've seen this freakish. Him, Wilt, and who's the other guy? Shaq.
You were around when Wilt was around?
Hey, man, I see the tapes. I see the tapes, and if I can't get the VHS, I'm looking at all the stat lines. So it tells me in Braille that this dude was a freak of nature. I'm telling you.
All right, so he now is the
freakiest dudes I've ever seen play basketball.
He now has the second best odds to win Defensive Player of the Year behind Gobert. So Vegas says that might be true, best defensive player. I think it is. Forget about it. I agree. He had that 10 blocks on February 12th, I think, against Toronto. And this is really where he kind of separates himself from Gobert. He leads the league in blocks and ranks second in block rate. Then he ranks third in defensive rebound rate and ninth in defensive box plus minus. Those are all ahead of Gobert. So he is now, I'll tell you what, JT, you might want to put some of that JT money that you've got sewn in the mattresses in the mansion. He's at plus 650, meaning you put 100 down and he wins the award, you win 650. Second best odds. He's creeping up. At one point, he was like plus 2,500. He's gaining ground on Gobert. And
made the bet at 25.
Yeah, you should have. We should have when you said it. Because you got to remember this. Sometimes there's voting fatigue. We know this. I don't like the
Gobert ain't a media favorite.
I don't like to hear that because I think if a guy has won it 5 years in a row, but he's the best one in the sixth year, he should win it again. The problem is you've got this shiny new car, Victor Wembanyama.
It's shiny.
And you got Gobert. Maybe there's some voting fatigue. Get that JT money in the mattresses. Get it out.
I told you, man.
Go to the local Hard Rock.
Wilt Chamberlain, Wembanyama. You think I'm playing, man? We see in the next one.
Hold on. Pump the brakes, though, because Wilt can score 100. We've seen it. Wilt's going to score on anybody. All right? So
Victor doing all this, and he's not even playing, like, elite starter minutes. Like, that's the most insane thing. Like, he barely pushing 30 minutes a game.
JT, Dikembe Mutombo was great at defense. Like, Victor's got to – he's got to keep elevating his offense.
Dikembe wasn't out there on the perimeter shooting threes.
I understand that, but don't say Wilt yet.
Dikembe wasn't out there getting 5x5s like it's easy.
Don't say
45 minutes a game. He wasn't doing that. I'm sorry. There's a reason why I said Wilt Chamberlain, not Dikembe. Like, I ain't dissing this man like that.
Don't compare him to Wilt yet.
Next one, you're gonna come back and you're gonna agree with me at one point. Watch.
Never, just because of that.
He is going to break the lead.
All right, we're done. We're done with that. Again, I win the show again. Great job by me. All the fans and listeners out there, thank you again for listening. And remember to please subscribe to us, JT and the Don, all sports podcast presented by Give Us a Shot Network. We can be found on all of the major platforms and where you find all of your other favorite podcasts. And remember, if you like what we do, leave us a 5-star review. And JT,
if you don't like what we do,
leave us a 5-star review. Remember to subscribe to Give Us a Shot Network on their YouTube channel and follow us, our handle at JT and the Don on social media. We can be found on Instagram, X, formerly Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook. So, JT, a lot of fun, man. NFL season's not too far. And until the next episode, see ya.
Peace.